man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm going to get that gun of mine, and I'm going to change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadi Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. And today, we're going to be talking about the witches, but before we get into that, I got to introduce you to my friends. So first up, we have Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
I'm just waiting for you to go into a full-on, oh, when you need them most, where are your friends?
That's the next time.
My what's good is, okay, so the Peacock app launched, and it's mostly kind of whatever. It's got a lot of, you know, NBC Universal content. But the thing to really be on the lookout for, and you can watch this for free if you don't mind the ads, is a new thing called The Amber Ruffin Show. Amber Ruffin, you may know as a writer and performer from Late Night with Seth Meyers. She has... in the last couple of years, created some really funny sketches and bits that, you know, have that I discovered on YouTube because, you know, I am not really watching the late night talk shows so much. Anyway, they have given her her own show. And of course, she's having to figure out how to do her own show in the middle of a pandemic. And so it's her and her best pal, who is, you know, her sidekick with no studio audience in Studio 8G. And it's just really smart and funny. And she is... very sweetly demeanored, but also like not afraid to be really cutting when talking about, you know, racism in America or just sort of political topics or whatever. So it's a really smart show, but it's also a lovely show. And I'm just a big fan of her now. And I really am glad that she's getting this break. And I hope that it doesn't get lost on a streaming service that people maybe aren't looking at so much. But anyway, Peacock, The Amber Ruffin Show.
Ooh, yeah, and a friend of the pod, Demi Adijuive, writes yes. on it. I like that. I totally yes. ruined it at first, but
and
you know
she
what?
Offered a tutorial on pronunciations this yeah. week, and you just failed.
I know. Well, you know, Demi can kiss my ass. Love you, boo. Also, who we have in the booth with us is Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
So it's funny because we obviously don't discuss what's good in the head because, you know, we pocket it away so we could share it on air. And I love the themes of it. Like sometimes we'll all talk about food. And I also have a TV show. Oh. Mine is not topical. It's like 2 years old. So it's an uncool... but I'm so happy I found it. Actually, it's much older than that. But I'm only interested in one season, and that show is MTV's Are You the One, which is this weird-ass dating show that also has sort of like, they did statistics and figured out, I don't even understand the gameplay yet. But what I'm watching with my friend Art over Zoom is season 8, they did a queer... and when oh, I yes. say they did a queer season, I mean, it's like 10, it's not even gender. There's people, there's non-binary, there's a trans guy, there's a whole mix, but everyone is bi or pansexual. So their options doubled, obviously, normally, not obviously, but it's MTV. Normally, it's a very hetero lineup. The queer season, it is the most, you're like, if you want to explain fluidity to people, have I got the show for you? And so that part of it's interesting, but it's also what I love about it is these are people that it's the opposite of who's normally on dating reality shows because they are nothing but self-aware. Like their initial conversations with people are like, well, I have a lot of... touch insecurities, but my love language is Barbara, and it's such a different way in, and it's such a loving environment, and these are people who are like flourishing in being around so many people that feel like-minded and also horny, so it's great.
Yeah, Dave was obsessed with that show. We talked about it a lot on LKTV, and yeah, it was just the idea of a dating show where all the contestants could conceivably wind up with any of the other contestants.
Yes, exactly.
And not even necessarily two at a time.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh.
There you go.
You know, you love to see. I just love when people just getting freaky. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody coming together. I'm telling you. And just,
you will appreciate the mindset of some of these contestants a whole lot.
Yeah. I was raised on MTV, which probably explains a lot. You know, I'm built like a real world contestant. I always be like, look, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, but I'm trying to get it in. That's all I know.
Ooh, it's true.
All right. And also, we have some great guests. They are hyped. I'm hyped for them. And you're going to be even more hyped. They're writers and hosts of the Ruin podcast, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Livey. What's good?
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to have you here.
We are very happy to be here.
Ooh, what's good? What's going on? How you feeling? What's going on in your lives? What you buying? What you thinking about?
Something that's good is the Dodgers win. When exactly those come out, but I also want to bring that up because I feel like my mind is very foggy, and I know that we will be playing a game, so I'm already apologizing for where I'm at. But a great day, a great year for LA sports. So, I mean, we're just riding high off of that this week.
Ooh, yeah, me too.
It's nice to have something positive exactly. In the news.
You know, coming down to LA. I mean, the last time the Dodgers have won a World Series, I was born. That was 1988. So for it to come around, I think, you know, there's one common denominator. In the last two wins, I was alive. So yeah. I might be the lucky charm of Los Doyers.
That works.
Yes. Ooh.
Wait, does Allison have a separate what's good?
Yeah. I don't live in LA, so I don't care if the Dodgers win or lose.
Funny, I do live in LA and I don't care either.
My what's good? I recently bought a foot massager.
Oh boy. Foot massager.
I can't recommend it enough. It was an impulse buy from like a home medical website.
Oh, wow.
It is the best. It was not cheap. It was like $100, but I use it like twice a day. I like smoke weed and put my feet in it and just kind of lose myself. It is
nice.
Unbelievable.
Is it like a tub?
Alone.
Is it a tub?
No.
Of
it's like
no.
You put your feet. It looks like two ski boots that are like joined together almost and like a dip, but like you put them and it just gets like, it's like a 20-minute massage and heating and there's like stuff going on in it. And I live alone. So pandemic has been kind of hard. So this is my touch.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I need it. Yeah. I'm going to need a link. You know, I'm a Pisces, so my power lies within my feet.
Yeah, I'll send it around for sure.
Yeah, I definitely need a look. I love a foot rub.
It's something I miss so much. It's like massages and foot, which sounds so awful to be like, what do I miss when, you know, everybody's dying and losing their jobs and emptying their savings? Like massages. But I miss physical touch.
I also love a good couple's foot rub. Like I was hanging out with someone and I didn't want to initiate the foot rub because I don't want them to think I'm a weird feet guy, but I think, you know, foot rubs are fun. Nothing against our feet folks that listen to the show. I'm just, that's not my vibe. And I feel like if you initiate foot rubs, the first thing in your head is like, is he a foot guy? Is he?
For sure.
Yeah, you have to start with sex and build to foot rubs.
Exactly. Oh,
Iffy, what's good with you?
What's good
if you're
with
not,
me?
If it's not feet.
Yeah, I mean, look, I will rub the feet. No suckage, though. Here's what's good with me. I took a picture with it, so everyone will see it. But I got this Dream Cloud box. And as you see, it says Dream Cloud on it. And
I thought it said Drea Cloud.
Yeah, that'd be even tighter. But it had, like, you know, all lifetime warranty, everything that's good, you know, with it. And it's important to note this because I ordered this like last week and I bought a California king bed because I was on a full and then it took me way too long to realize I'm way too big for a full size bed. So I went up. A California king needs a California king. And so I ordered this, get rid of my full mattress, and I was going to be in Ojai for the weekend. So I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about not having a bed when I come back. It'll be here. But the whole time I'm in Ojai, it said it got delivered on Saturday, and something in my bed was like, in my head was like, if you gotta check on that. You gotta check on that. You got a mattress delivered, and it's just, you just leaving it out there? I was like, nah, it's going to be there. And then Sunday was nagging at me so much that I drove all the way down from Ojai to, I was like, let me just push it in my house and get it over with. It was nowhere to be found.
Oh, no.
Because it was stolen. Mm. Someone stole my mattress. And I had to stop down, call DreamCloud to get a replacement, yell at FedEx because I spoke to my neighbor and they said that they left it outside the complex. Like they didn't even put it behind the door. Oh, but I'm like looking at the packaging and it's just basically saying, steal me. Like it's explaining that it's a California King. Like it's all out there. Like this is how they deliver it. I was like, oh, I don't even blame who stole it. That was smart of me. To find, you know, so anyway, I haven't had a chance to lay on it yet. I've been sleeping on my couch these past 2 days because I've been waiting for it. And I'm a big person. Some of you haven't met me in real life. I'm huge. I'm 6'1", 260 pounds. It was not fun, but the DreamCloud did send ahead some memory foam pillows, which I did use on a couch. Really good. Highly recommend them. Do not recommend thieves. That is my what's not good. What's good is California King mattresses. So the saga is over, but obviously I'm still mad. I'm over here. I'm reading the four agreements. So hopefully I'm going to be able to let this pain away. You know, but until I finish this
your
book.
What's good is a mattress you haven't slept on yet.
Yeah. Nice. And reading the four agreements. I snuck that in there too.
Gotcha. Yeah. Hallie and Allison, I think it's important you guys know if he sneaks in his measurements in every show.
Fascinating stuff.
There's not a time we do not hear that.
Swole gains work their way into every conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, is this the last time I mention it? We'll find out because today we're going to discuss the witches. And, you know, I will say a member who I will not name to expose them asked my thoughts on how hot which version of one of the actresses are. I don't, you know, who can tell? Who can tell which was the person? But just know, of course, I'm in on it. We'll get to that. We're also going to be talking about our Halloween plans, spooky dookie, and of course, staff picks. But first, since this is our Halloween episode, and we have both horror experts and scaredy cats on the show, we're going to hold a special contest between the two camps, and our producer Casey is going to explain the rules.
Hello, I am Casey. I am here to quiz you guys a little bit on horror movies.
No.
I have split you up into kind of along ideological lines pertaining to horror preference. So on one side, I have the horror freaks, as it were. That'll be Hallie, Andrea.
Wonderful.
You guys will be the freaks, if you're okay with that designation.
Sure,
yes. And, seems fair.
Okay, good. And then on the other side, I have the weenies, which that's going to be Alonzo, Iffy, and Allison. Are you guys okay with?
Yeah. You know,
yep. The weenies. That's where I stand.
Okay. So how we're going to do this, is going to be difficult for both of you guys because I'm going to be quizzing Team Weenie on very scary movies.
Oh.
Okay? And then that's something that you guys are like not experts in.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So it'll be hard. And then on the other side, you freaks, I'm going to be quizzing you guys on non-scary Halloween movies. So I think you guys are going to have a little difficulty on both sides here.
Very clever.
Yes, very clever. Very smart.
Casey intentionally didn't tell us the rules so I couldn't study.
Yes, I didn't want any study.
I appreciate that.
No heads up.
Drea, I don't think you could have even studied for that. I really tried to make this equally difficult on both sides.
Okay.
So if anyone runs away with it, I'm sorry. I guess the winner will win a fun size candy bar of their choice, depending on candy availability.
Fun size.
So
good.
Okay, so and you guys can work together as teams to answer the questions. Here we go. I'm gonna start with Team Weenie here. Okay?
Great.
Team Weenie, are you ready?
Yeah.
We are ready.
Okay. In the 1987 film Hellraiser, what is Pinhead? I'm gonna give you a few options here.
Okay.
What is Pinhead? Is he A, an explorer from a different dimension? B, a demon from hell? Or C, Satan himself from hell?
I want to say B, Does that sound right?
I was also thinking B.
I know the actual name, which is a Cenobite, which, you know, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That, I'm going to hit you with that. I'm actually, you know, I don't know if that's the trick that you won't use the name Cenobite. And I know that because they did name the female Cenobite. Her name is just female Cenobite. Yeah.
God, I did you love learn this at
Spirit Halloween or what?
Yeah, I usually stand out there looking for hot video game characters.
It might be A, right? I don't know.
I think hell plays into this, though.
Yeah, I think it's a big hell energy.
Yeah.
Okay, what is your answer?
Let's say B.
Yeah,
okay,
we're going with B.
We're going with B.
You're incorrect. He is an explorer from a different dimension that explores in both pain and pleasure. So you got that wrong.
Sorry, Allison, you were right.
Yeah.
It's very sexual. Yes.
I didn't think that was an either or, but you know. Hey.
Yeah.
I thought there was kind of a trick there because it's named Hellraiser, but he's not really from hell.
Yeah. No,
he's just raising hell.
Yes, he's raising hell.
Casey, do we get to take a point away from you because you didn't begin this all by saying, do you want to play a game?
That's not kind, you know, that's not really my,
that's not your thing. Okay.
That's not my thing. That's not my kink. So okay. Okay, freaks, are you ready, freaks?
Yeah, let's do that.
Ready or terrified?
I know. Okay. Filled with dread.
Here we go. In the Disney Classic Channel original movie Halloween Town 2, Calabar's Revenge, who is Calabar and how does the revenge manifest itself? Now I'll give you three options as well here. Calabar is a demon attempting to destroy Halloween Town because of all the mistreatment he had received as a young demon. That's A. B, Calabar is the former mayor of Halloween Town, and in this film, his son Cal is now trying to take over the mortal world. That's B. C, Calabar is a witch who got kicked out of witching school and is now seeking revenge on both the mortal world and Halloween Town. Which one do you think it is?
Are you familiar with Halloween Town at all, Hallie?
In my mind, Tim Curry is in the original Halloween Town. I have not seen either of them, but would Tim Curry come back for a sequel? I wouldn't, but you know.
Oh, that's okay.
So, to answer your question, no, I don't know anything about it.
I also don't know.
I got nothing.
And you just, I automatically just pictured like a regular mortal town that was just super into decorating.
He
started saying demons, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do well.
Boy.
I think we could get rid of C because I feel like Disney would, like, Calabar seems real male to me. Like, I think they would not do a female named Calabar. I feel like B has more narrative like promise to it. If it's a sequel and it's called Calabar's Revenge, that seems more like pointed.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I feel comfortable with that.
Okay, that is correct. Yes. You guys got a point. So one point for the freaks. Okay.
I don't know if he's in Halloween Town, but I think for Tim Curry, you might be thinking of the worst witch.
Oh no, I am.
Okay.
You're right.
I don't think Tim Curry is in Halloween Town 1. And Calabar himself is actually not in Halloween Town 2. Just his son shows up.
Oh, nice.
So.
Oh, you know, they probably went out to Tim Curry. So I'm still comfortable with that.
But yeah. Where he was at, he was not going to, I mean, essentially do another movie like that.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Moving on. Here we go, weenies. In the 2013 film The Conjuring, what is the name of that damn doll that gave them so much trouble?
I know this one.
Go for it.
It's Annabelle.
That is correct. One point for the weenies. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes.
Okay, good job, weenies.
Great, we did it.
That one seemed easy, but okay.
Here we go, freaks.
Trash talk.
Okay, one of the rules of this game is not to complain about how easy the game was. Okay, here we go. In the classic 1991 film, Ernest Scared Stupid, who does Ernest get scared stupid by? Meaning, who is the main villain? I'll give you three options here. A Michael Myers-type slasher, a demonic witch, a leprechaun-like demonic troll.
It's the troll. So C.
That is correct.
Yes, I remember the trolls.
Oh, thank God. Woo! Oh, my God.
It is a troll. That movie, yes.
I loved that movie as a kid.
As did I. all right, here we go, weenies. In 2014's The Babadook, how does Mr. Babadook come to haunt new victims? I'll give you three options here. A, someone in the victim's family must die tragically. B, the victim simply needs to become aware of Mr. Babadook's existence. C, the victim must read the mysterious book, Mr. Babadook.
I know this one because we did this on our podcast Ruined, where we talk about horror movies. Shit. Plug.
Yeah.
And it is C, and there's a terrifying book, and Hallie gave me nightmares telling me about it.
That is, I don't consider that correct.
Ooh!
Because
excuse me?
Excuse me?
Because Mr. Babadook haunts people by people knowing that he exists.
Okay, but you can't throw the book in as an option.
Yeah,
when the book
is right here.
This is, I call something. Okay, fine.
Yeah. I'll give you the point on that one.
I call a Babadook on that play.
Okay, very good. Okay, here we go, freaks. We got to keep moving on here.
Okay.
Okay, in the classic 2000 Jonathan Lipnicki vehicle, The Little Vampire.
Oh, no.
Who is Jonathan Lipnicki in this movie? I'll give you three options here. A, the little vampire. B, a boy mistaken as the little vampire who befriends the little vampire. Or C, a boy who comes from a family of vampire hunters but befriends the little vampire against his family's wishes.
I can't even think of it. I feel like it's too easy for him to be the little vampire.
Right, that was my thought too.
Although, that's going to bite us probably.
Well, you're right. When you're right.
As it were, yes. Very funny.
Ah, nice, very Alonzo. Or he's someone mistaken as the little vampire. That was the second one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That feels... Who released this? What studio am I at here?
I don't have that information readily.
I don't know, girl.
Sorry.
Do you have any thoughts?
They all feel, like, correct. So, boy, let's go. Do you feel B? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I don't know. This is going to bite us.
Yeah.
Your answer is B?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Woo-hoo! You know, I knew it. Big fan of that whole movie.
Anyone seen your old Lipnicki head?
Oh, yeah.
Big time Lipnicki head right over here.
All right, here we go, weenies. In the 2005 film, The Descent, before the protagonists meet a tribe of murderous humanoid cave dwellers, before they encounter them, how does this movie initially begin? I'll give you three options. A, as a girls' trip-esque spelunking adventure. B, a scientific expedition on...
Say that title again. Sorry to cut you off.
The Descent?
You just
I'm
going
to cut you off, A.
That's correct. Have you seen that? I saw
that in theaters. I hated the end. That end jump scare was dumb. There was no reason for it. Why? The movie was over. Let me leave.
Speaking like a true weenie.
Speaking like a true weenie. Indeed.
Okay, freaks, here we go.
All right, bring it. Give me another movie I've never heard of.
In the classic 2003 Eddie Murphy film, The Haunted Mansion,
okay,
how did Eddie Murphy and his family come to find themselves inside the Haunted Mansion? A, Eddie Murphy inherited the Haunted Mansion from a distant relative. B, Eddie Murphy is a realtor and wanted to sell the Haunted Mansion. Or C, Eddie Murphy is a house flipper thinking he can make a deal if he flipped the Haunted Mansion.
So this is based on the ride that you walk through. I know that's not a ride, right? Like at Disney Park.
I believe that's considered a dark ride, yes.
You ride through most of it.
Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes. I feel like
if his family's with him, I feel like the inheritance thing.
Agreed.
Seems right? And doesn't it have all those like pictures on the wall? Like it's like the people that lived there before, which maybe are tied to him. A, we'll do inheritance.
That feels right.
Okay.
That is incorrect.
No!
Eddie Murphy is a realtor, and he's kind of using this as an opportunity because he wants to sell the Haunted Mansion, but he's also kind of making it up to his family because he takes them on vacation to go to the Haunted Mansion. It's a bad movie.
They thought about that too long. He should have just inherited
it.
Come on,
so too.
Ours is better. Ours is way better.
It's cleaner.
All right. Weenies, this is your last question here.
Okay.
And let's see. You guys have both gotten one wrong, and I do have a tiebreaker here.
Ooh.
Okay.
So,
great.
Okay. In the movie The Exorcist, what is the name of the demon that has taken control of poor little Reagan? A, Pazuzu. B, Paimon. C, Person.
A.
A.
Boo.
Look at these weenies. We know answers.
Yeah, weenies.
Because Exorcist 2 gives us the classic line, Kokomu can help me find Pazuzu.
Oh,
oh my God.
That is
everybody's
poetic.
Favorite line from Exorcist 2.
If I was going to like, if I had to like retell that to somebody after watching, I would have to be like, oh, it's like Kokomo and then, you know, the Beach Boys song and then Kevin Federline single, Popo's Ow, and then you kind of.
What?
Okay.
Yes.
Here we go, freaks.
What is a great question to what I just said.
Yes. All right, I'm
okay.
ready.
Here we go. This is your final question. You need to get this right, and I'll be a little lenient on this one. Can you explain the plot of the classic 2005 movie Bewitched?
Oh, the one with Nicole Kidman?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So Nicole Kidman plays an actual witch who... is like living her life, and then she ends up, there's like a meta quality, and it's Will Ferrell mm-hmm. plays an actor, and then so she's cast to play Samantha the witch on a TV show, but she's also an actual witch,
right?
And then the two of them begin a courtship that mirrors her and Darren's courtship on the show.
Yeah,
that is correct.
It's like adaptation, yes, but bad.
Oh my God, that's a double feature.
Did you know that that movie was written and directed by Nora Ephron?
Yes, I did.
I did well, not.
I find that very
but
shocking.
But I am thankful for whatever flight I was on that I watched that movie.
That's a real okay. airplane movie.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys have a... There's a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. You each must come up with a movie... that scared me the most. Ooh. Which movie had the biggest impact and scared me the most? It's on the weenie. It's a weenie.
It is
movie.
A weenie one.
The Descent.
Oh, Ernest no, Scared Stupid. Was it that
okay.
one?
What do you guys? What is your guess?
Wait. Oh, so it's one of the ones that you you asked the hardcore people, but it's one of the weenie
yes.
movies.
Yes.
Oh,
but it's a weenie
then Ernest
movie.
Scared Stupid.
Oh yeah.
You guys can't guess the same.
What?
Oh,
us the rules of the game.
You're making it up as you go along.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know what? Okay. I'm just going to say this was a lovely tie and a lovely time
yes!
had by all.
I'll take a tie.
It was Ernest Scared Stupid. That troll really scared me as a
too.
Kid.
Oh,
yeah. I had nightmares.
And Eartha
about
Kitt
it.
Was the neighbor, and I loved her, that character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. I feel like there's nothing scarier than ending in a tie, so this seems appropriate.
Really, yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
It's like Rosemary's Baby. You leave unfulfilled.
It's exactly like Rosemary's Baby. Yes. Okay. Thank you, everyone. If you take us out of here.
Nice right, job well, with that game, Casey. That was
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, you know, well-crafted game by super producer
absolutely.
Casey.
Yeah.
I actually did have a good time. But we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the witches. Just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi. Are you someone who thinks that when one door closes, another one opens?
Someone who always sees the light at the end of the tunnel?
If you answered yes to one or both of these questions, good for you.
We are not those people.
Nope. I'm Annabelle Gurwitch, and I'm a, you know that other door opening? It probably leads to a broom closet kind of person.
And I'm Laura House. When I see a light at the end of a tunnel, I assume it's a train headed right toward me.
Laura and I have created a brand new podcast for people like us. It's called Tiny Victories. We're sharing personal tiny victories. Victories or things we've read or seen that inspire resilience.
So if you're looking for a tiny reason to get out of bed each week, subscribe to Tiny Victories.
Available on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get tiny.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Allison Leiby,
Hallie Kiefer,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about witches. Allison and Hallie, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
Sure.
Oh, sure.
It's based on a Roald Dahl book. The premise is actually a little boy and his grandmother go to a gorgeous ocean.
Don't forget to start that his parents died.
Tragically.
It starts off
yes.
so tragically. His parents died and he lives with his wonderful grandmother, Octavia
played by
Spencer,
Octavia Spencer.
Who's brilliant in this. She's so fun. Cute.
And we learn early on that she, the grandma, knows about witches, has a lot of information about witches that she's sharing with her grandson. And once they have a sort of run-in with a witch at a grocery store, they... take refuge in a gorgeous seaside hotel. Really made me want to, like, just take a staycation in a hotel in
LA.
Love
an old hotel on the water. I mean, sign me up.
They never go to the beach, but we know it's there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they were running from this one particular witch only to discover that they happen to be staying at the hotel at the exact same time as a witch convention in which the Grand High Witch of the world is revealing her master plan to turn all the world's children into mice.
Yes. So. And they're going to do that through adding a potion to the world's candy supply and mm-hmm. also owning a candy store, which, like, you know, pick a lane, ladies. What are we going to do? Is it going to be a distribution thing? Is this a brick and mortar store? You know, I just need more answers. Obviously, the witch is played by the intense Anne Hathaway.
Extremely intense. She's
doubled to an
11. Yeah.
Yeah. She changes accents at least 9 times in the course of an hour and a half. So that's bold. The kids turn into mice and
we could get into the specific of it.
Yeah, I didn't want to
Yeah, exactly. I feel like for me, this was a tough watch. having seen the original film with Angelica Houston.
Yes, I was going to ask. Did anybody go into this not having seen the 1990 version?
I've not seen it.
Yeah, okay. I have a huge guess as to what my answer is to that question.
I had a hunch. Just
yeah, I
anyway,
had not
sorry,
seen. I'd seen like clips of the moment when Angelica Houston as the Grand High Witch took off her wig and mm-hmm. revealed herself and looked all disgusting. So I'd seen that, and I remember kind of reading this. Like, I feel like we read a lot of Roald Dahl,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So like I loved the BFG largely because my friends and I called him the Big Fucking Grandpa, even though that's not what it was. But so I had not. This was my first introduction to a cinematic The Witches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, Iffy, I know that you had a question about this or we had a whatever, but I would love to, like, dig in via the thoughts, because you've already alluded to it, the Anne Hathaway
of it.
Because yes. I think it'll be a big thing on how people took this film in terms of... How Anne Hathaway took this film.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. I first saw it in as a picture that was sent to me by the person who will remain nameless and said, I think I'm really attracted to the witch Anne Hathaway. I'm curious what your thoughts will be. And you know, I was on board, big sharp teeth and mouth. I was like, okay, got a little Baraka thing going on. That's a Mortal Kombat reference for those who don't know. I always forget that I really, very brave statement by me. Anne Hathaway is very attractive, and I always forget. I feel like she isn't in enough stuff.
I can't believe.
She should be in more. I know. I had to
go. Controversial.
I had to go out and say it. I had to, stick my neck out. And be
I hope you're ready to
say.
Get canceled.
Yeah. Here come the letters.
No, yeah. she had like had a baby right before this. I was like texting Hallie, and I was like, her body looks incredible. I
mean, yeah, she's
her
gorgeous
acting choices
as this
aside,
witch.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the 9 accents, and it's like I would at least say that it's intentional, which I thought that
Ooh,
was kind
yes.
of fun.
Oh. There's a lot of intention to the character. I would agree with that. My problem with it is that she comes in at 11. And she goes out at an 11. Like, and I think that's fine, whatever. I just wish that we had ramped up into sort of the scariness of the reveal. Because as soon as she walks in that hotel, she looks at Stanley Tucci, who, again, I didn't think there was enough of him in the movie.
Yeah,
and is just screaming. Like, she's already acting bizarre. And so for me... Looks great.
But, great. Beautiful gowns.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Beautiful gowns.
I felt like I haven't seen the original Witches, but in terms of like Matilda or another Roald Dahl, like the Trunchbull is never at anything less than an 11 either. Like mm-hmm. his villains are not discreet. There's not subtlety there.
It's
and
true.
I'm an Annie Hath's total defender forever.
Annie
I
Hath.
Love,
okay.
I do.
You can't make
I
fun
love...
of my Leo Dio anymore.
That was for you. That's from Key and Peele. Yeah. I didn't even make that. But I love an earnest, just, she is such, She happens to be a stunning woman who's a stone cold dork, and she gives it her all, everything she does. I think she's incredibly talented. I've seen her do some. I loved Rachel getting married. I loved what she did with Catwoman. I think she has a lot of range and a lot of whatever. And she is also just unabashedly trusting. And I would actually, the lack of shape to what she was doing, I would put more at the foot of Robert Zemeckis than I would at the actress who's just like,
absolutely,
all right, I'm going to throw myself. You're my net, dude. Like, you're the one who's calibrating where I am at each of these things. And he was like, just stay here at 11.
And I'm sure she saw Angelica Houston's performance, which is big and bold and broad and a lot of fun to watch. And is very much, I think, in keeping with what we're used to seeing in a Roald Dahl movie anyway. Years before I joined LA Film Critics, I was always, I thought so much of them because in one year they gave Angelica Houston the Best Actress Award for both The Grifters and The Witches. Which I thought was super cool of them. But yeah, I love, I mean, I, you know, Hallie,
oh,
I don't,
wait,
I don't know if you agree with me.
You mean
but
The Grifters, like the less interesting Heartbreakers?
Yes, that one.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Hallie, are you also a fan of the 90 versions?
Absolutely loved it. Yeah, I think so. That I think is also part of it for me is like I have such fondness for that movie. I think it's so well done. So I liked all of the elements that were sort of similar. I liked like the story at the beginning that Octavia Spencer is telling her grandson about her friend turning into a chicken. Like to me, that was the kind of thing like when I was a kid, I would have found scary. Like something where it's like close enough to reality where as a kid, I'm like, I don't think that could happen, but like maybe I just don't know.
I don't know that it can't.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
That chicken was obviously to me, it was reminiscent of the end of Freaks. And that was more terrifying to me than a ton of other things. Like the idea of watching it happen, having it be your friend, being immediately surrounded by adults who don't believe you.
Yeah.
No, everything in there is like little kid terror.
We talked about like when you realize that Robert Zemeckis co-wrote this with Kenya Barris and Guillermo del Toro, and you're thinking, of those three, Zemeckis is the one I least want directing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I also think the other thing I kept comparing to the 90s version was, of course, the special effects. Because in the 90s version, it's all practical effects that like were gorgeous and extremely well done. And so I feel like, again, that's comparing that part. The effects are, listen, Robert Zemeckis, I don't know whether he's like, he just doesn't see things right or whatever. I mean, I feel like a lot of his movies hit that uncanny valley a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, this was a lot of that where I'm just like, man, it's not that it looks bad. Like clearly like money and like talent went into making it, but it just looks like wrong in some sense. Right? It's not what I wanted, I guess. But again, that's on him.
Like, have the cat be real. It just had to be a cat 99% of the time. You didn't even need to direct it. Like, at least have, like, some things feel like they're grounded in, like, visually. Like, I know that that is a cat, and that cat is real.
I just have to say this, y'all. I have.
Yes.
But in the end, the kids stay mice. And there's, like, an allusion to this. But in the book, there's a whole thing where the kid is happy that it's not going to outlive his grandmother because he doesn't want to imagine, losing another person. In this movie, they're like, oh, that's a little too dark. So instead, we're going to have Octavia Spencer with her face say, oh, you ain't living that long.
Yes. Really? Yes.
And they give her a cough.
What?
They give her this Chekhov's gun of a cough that never pays off.
The cough is how she knows witches are near, but it also like comes and goes. Like she doesn't cough all the time.
Yeah. Wait, you think she'd be hacking up a lung in that hotel? It's full of
witches. Oh, they're all witches.
It's literally nothing but witches. I would love to talk in more detail. So we have our three mice. We have our main kid who's turned into a mice. We have his fat friend who does nothing but be fat, and he loves to eat because he's the fat friend. And I freaking hate fat kid stuff in children's movies. They always do it. And it's always like that kid literally does not do a single thing other than shove his face or talk about food or not be able to squeeze through things.
And that's specifically a Roald Dahl obsession. Like, he's basically a Gustus Gloop, you know?
That's true. Yeah. He is a Gustus Gloop. And then they have the third mouse, which actually has come with them as the main boy's pet that he already received, who just starts talking once the rest of them start turning into mice and is voiced by Kristen effing Chenoweth. Why? Yes. And I was like, so this person's been a mouse for 40 years because she's a 50-year-old woman.
Dear God. Yeah.
Right.
What?
How old is it?
And they didn't say that. I'm like, did you just turn? Have you been living as a mouse for decades? Like, that'll help him know how long he's going to live because this broad is past middle age. Like,
say like she got turned into a mouse 4 months before they got
I didn't hear that.
She was a teenager and she's just doing a chirpy voice the way people in animation do no matter what age they are.
I have the same thing where it's like have a child like the other two are voiced by children and you're
actual children.
I was like, is this and you're right, they clarify, but I was like, has this woman been a mouse her entire life?
Decades
of being a mouse and being in a cage. I was like, this is a nightmare, which is also how I thought about the ending. Was like, I think in a more competent filmmaker's hands, or even in the original, I think you could have had that ending and have it be dark and allow both Octavia Spencer and the little boy to have a moment of like, well, that's sad, but they're like, isn't it great, you're only gonna live 9 more years and then you'll die and you'll never have a life without me. And I was like, that's the saddest shit I've ever heard, and I understand it's from the book, this movie has not earned that. This movie did not earn a dark ending like that, in my opinion.
But it also, the other thing with the ending, like, I love absurdity, and I also don't always need a message, but this movie for real wraps up, like, with Octavia Spencer and the voiceover talking as if there's been a message imparted, and it's the most weird, like, circular, well, this way, you know, I just was like, I felt like they did not know the next word that was coming. I'm like, I would love to see somebody try and stick this landing. Like,
did anybody have an issue with the race of it all? Like the idea that this is set in the 60s, that they're going to this resort in like Alabama or Louisiana, that the bellboys all kind of give a raised eyebrow to Octavia Spencer when she comes sweeping in, but that neither Stanley Tucci nor any of the guests raise any issue with the idea that a black grandmother and her grandchild are staying in what would probably have been a whites only establishment at that moment in history. Like, I get that, you know, we do non-traditional casting and we don't have to, like, you know, we're not forced to hew to, like, you know, like you can give, you know, Mary Queen of Scots an Asian advisor or whatever in that movie. But like when you specifically set a movie in the American South in the 1960s, it's like, what's even happening
here? And they tie in enough elements of classism that like she pointedly, the reason they go to this resort is she said, oh, witches seek out poor kids who nobody's gonna miss, so we're gonna go to the honkiest rich place I can find. And they also, it is like all of the staff, all of the understaff are African American. There's a small pause when she gets there, like you said, of this bellboy who's like, ma'am, and she's like, I'm staying here, and he's like, all right for you, good job.
Yeah,
but then, so yeah, I don't know if they thought that was like enough, but it's very strange.
For me personally, I was like, V cool. I was like, you know, even though I did like, there was like a part of me that really chuckled at the thought at the end, Anne Hathaway shouting the N-word at Octavia Spencer. Like that ending to me is very funny. No one wants to laugh at that because I'm the only black person, but just know, for me, that would have been hilarious. That aside,
I didn't laugh because I thought you meant that actually happened and I missed it.
Oh my
that
god.
That horrified me.
Whoa, that me would too. Be wild.
I was like, oh my god, I didn't even
know.
That was
the Kenya Barris draft, I think, maybe. They took it out.
As far as I know and people I know who have worked with it, a dream, a hard worker, and I beat her in fantasy football.
I will say, in my small, Octavia Spencer did a great job.
Oh yeah, she was great. She was great.
Who
yeah.
was alone in every scene talking to CGI mice.
And I was heavy lifting. Yeah.
I was embarrassed for her a lot and was like, I hope you got paid so well because you did a good job with some awkward ass talking to your purse moments. So.
Yeah, I know. You held it in. But now it's time for us to give our final review of this movie, The Witches. And the way we do that here is, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it? Screen it being the highest, skip it being the lowest, and, you know, stream it mid. We'll start with Hallie.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, that's gonna be a full skip for me.
Wow.
I think if you're listening, you have kids. I get it. Like if I was a kid and I saw it, I'd be like, okay, I was fun. I get it. Just watch the 90s version. It's scarier. It's cooler. It looks better. And the only other thing I wanted to say about this movie is every line in a movie is deliberately recorded and put on screen. They filmed Anne Hathaway just improvising, screaming like lines, like evil witch lines. And they included all of them. That final scene, she is screaming like, "You filthy fools, you rodents, you vermin." And it's clearly like she was just in a sound with it, like, we got to have something going on. And it's like, you could have used that time to like establish any other character, like establish her powers, where she came from, what is she? They don't. So in conclusion, skip this movie.
I'll go next, and I would also skip it. This is not, if you want to see Anne Hathaway do an over-the-top performance that's good, just watch Ocean's 8.
Yeah,
nice.
That's my opinion. I like her a lot, so nothing but love for Anne, but Annie Hath, not my taste.
I'm a stream it only if you have children, and children like under the age of 9 or something. I think young kids, this is a fun thing. And you know what? Just lead into a general conversation about race relations in that time right after. Start them young. If you do not, yeah, I'm going to skip it. Skip Ooh. It. And also, there's better black cat footage out there in the world. Justice for that black cat.
I would say stream it, but only if you have watched the 90s version first, which is currently streaming on Netflix, so you have no excuse not to. Wow. Once you've seen the 90s version, it's worth a look, because I think Anne Hathaway is just having a gas, and I think it's a lot of fun. And I looking back at my review of this, I was probably kinder to it than I thought, because I expected it to be much, much worse. But it's not great, and it's, you know, it's not a patch on the 90s version. It doesn't need to exist, frankly. There are some okay, fun, scary moments, but yeah, absolutely watch the 90s version, and then this gets a stream it.
Yeah, I'm a rock with the stream it too. I think I liked it the most out of everyone here. I like a big goofy, like, you know, I'm an improviser. I love the goofs. I love the gags. I love big stretchy noses to smell stinky kids. I definitely, this is something, I don't think Naomi would vibe with this quite yet. But this is something I would like sit down with the little and watch and have a good time. To me, it's just funny to see people get to play these like super just 11 ass characters and just have fun with it. As always, you know, child acting is what child acting is. I'm gonna just say that there, you know, they're trying their best. But I did feel like the movie was about 15 minutes too long. I felt like after we've dealt with the Grandmaster Witch, all that epilogue stuff that we had to sit through was kind of unnecessary. Like, I could have seen them leaving the hotel, credit roll. And yeah, once we got to the end and they were still mice,
Chris the Rock director scene, of Forrest Gump has some more needle drops for you.
Right?
Yeah. And Chris Rock did by the end seem unnecessary, because when it's still a mouse, it's like, oh, you could have gave that kid a little more money and just let him narrate the whole thing. I didn't have to hear Chris Rock. I love him.
Also, because Chris Rock never was got Chris to Rockin. Be as old as Chris Rock anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So it made no sense, because he was still, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Chris Rock owed Zemeckis like a movie. Like they had some, but because he was the most, like, that opening, like, speech was Chris Rock leaning into Chris Rock. They some witches, which I love. I love, but it's real funny when I was like, all right, you're doing it. But once again, me, when we would end on time, taking forever in my description of why I chose it, and we have to close this out. So we'll be right back after we hear from another show for Maximum Fun.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal, and all your questions will be asked and answered.
You're welcome.
All right, that's enough of that.
We got this.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Allison Leiby,
Hallie Keever,
Tria Clark.
And now we're going to be discussing our Halloween plans.
Something's happening.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
That's right, Ify. It's time for the return of the Christmas Zaddy Minutes.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
The calendar may say Halloween, but cable television wants you to know it's the Christmas season. So for folks who were not here for last year, here's a quick rundown of what happens. During this time, this most wonderful time of the year, I get exactly 1 minute to recap every Christmas movie that I have watched, be it Hallmark Channel, Lifetime, Netflix, theatrical, Up TV, wherever Christmas is happening and wherever I'm watching it. I get 60 whole seconds to talk about it. And Casey's going to play me my my 60 seconds and we're going to go. Okay, so Hallmark kicks off this weekend with four movies, two of which feature interracial couples, which is a huge honking deal for Hallmark. I know it's 2020, but for them, it's still sort of, you know, 1985. Anyway, one of them, Jingle Bell Bride, it's okay, involves getting flowers in Alaska. The other one, a lot better, was Deliver by Christmas, which keeps the couple apart most of the way, like it was, you know, Sleepless in Seattle, but whatever, it's fine. Christmas Tree Lane makes no sense, but Andrew Walker and Alicia Witt have a ton of chemistry. And Chateau Christmas, we finally get to see Luke McFarlane play the cello, and that's pretty much what it's got to offer. Netflix, three pretty dopey movies. Christmas in Ice, dumb. Christmas Unwrapped, really lame. Forever Christmas at least gives us Christopher Russell with his shirt off, which Hallmark never does. Best one of the week is Holiday on Netflix. Very funny, very charming comedy with Emma Roberts and Luke Bracey going through a whole year of holidays and pretending to be each other's dates and, of course, falling in love. It's worth it.
Nice. That's how you do something that's timed.
That's how you nail the landing, you stick it, and I hope y'all are getting hyped because it's time. We're about to get some of those, and you really, you know, you can either watch along and try and see if you can keep with Alonzo's pace, or you can wait till the minute review and see what you will check out. However you choose to do it, do it. All right, and now it's time for our staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Allison, Hallie, why don't you start?
My pick would be Let's Scare Jessica to Death from 1971, directed by John Hancock in his directorial debut. Genuinely very scary. What was really fun about it is the title makes you think it's going to be just sort of like a cheesy or like a slashery sort of, to me it gives you like teen, like B-movie vibes, but it's genuinely very scary. And basically it plays on a lot of, like, my fantasy right now is like to going somewhere in the country and getting out of the city. So it's about a couple that moves to a country house. And, well, I don't want to spoil too much, but let's just say, I don't want to like cut this out. I'm not going to spoil anything. It's genuinely very scary. So if you actually want to be scared, I would say you should watch Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
That poster traumatized me as a child, but I've been meaning to get around to watching it.
I want to buy the poster. It's really good.
Mine is not a Halloween or a scary movie or anything. It's just that I recently rewatched Airplane, which was an informative comedy in my younger days. And I was wondering if it would hold up. And it does. So go rewatch Airplane. And if you've never seen it, I don't know how you're walking around.
What do you make of this? I could make a brooch or a hat or a pterodactyl.
Or a flying pterodactyl. It's so funny.
I love Airplane.
Me too.
This one, Dre is really going to love because it's a 4.5-hour movie.
Yeah, it is.
The great documentarian Frederick Wiseman has a new film called City Hall. It just premiered at all the fall festivals, and it is now streaming on the Film Forum New York site. It is a film about the inner workings of Boston, everything from people talking their way out of traffic tickets and getting married to neighborhood groups meeting with the people who want to open a weed store. It is about the nuts and bolts of democracy on the city level and about the necessity of involvement in our politics. And if that sounds like a movie that was designed for 2020, it is. And Frederick Wiseman does this really great thing where he doesn't narrate. There's no music. He has long takes and is a fly on the wall. And you just have to take it all in. But there's so much to take in and so many fascinating characters, including the mayor of Boston, who pops up a lot in this movie and is just like legitimately a character. I love this movie. It made me want to go out and, like, I don't know, sign up for things or something. It really is a Valentine to community involvement and to direct democracy. And I can't recommend it enough. One of the best films of the year. Check it out.
Nice. I love a good Frederick Wiseman shout on this. Okay, my film is in the Halloween sort of sphere. It is called One Cut of the Dead. It's a Japanese zombie comedy from just a couple years ago. It is so good and so funny and so specific. So it has a slight meta quality in that there's this very low budget crew. It's following not like a mockumentary, but it's just about this film team that's making a zombie movie. And while they happen to be shooting at this plant, an actual zombie outbreak happens. And so then the director is like obsessed and is like, just keep shooting. And then, so they're filming the actual zombies and it blends in, and it's just really unique and really fun. It's rentable for like $4 from wherever you rent things, like Vudu or Amazon, or
I think it's on Shudder too.
Oh, it might be on Shudder right now. That's a good point. One Cut of the Dead. It's fun.
Well, you know, for me, usually we go with themes. You know, I'm not following. I either do go with themes or someone who's featured. Anne Hathaway, you know her, you love her. So, of course, taking another one of her movies to put in your eyeballs has to be one.
God help me if you say Ella Enchanted right now.
No. I'm going with one of the greatest sci-fi movies of our time. One of the greatest father-daughter stories of our time. It was the movie that, when I was driving to do another great short film, one by the name of Spinner, starring one yours truly and Timothy Chalamet, to which Timmy, on the way to Joshua Tree, said, I met with this director guy, and I said, what's his name? Christopher Nolan. He wants me to be in this movie. I was like, oh, you should probably do it. Interstellar. We're going to go see Interstellar. I want y'all to see it. I want y'all to live it. I still love that movie way more than I think most people do. But my follow-up for a spooky movie, though, because I want to give you both, is going to be a little Japanese movie. I think I might have had this as a pick before, but Wild Zero, featuring Japanese punk band Guitar Wolf, made way back in the 90s, and surprisingly woke takes on trans relationships. And you know, it really surprised me, because I went back and watched it with a friend of the pod, Luce, and I was like, oh no, there's a trans person. This is in the 90s. This is about to be bad. No, it was good. They basically said love is love in Japanese. I'll ask Brody Reed how to say that in Japanese. But that is my staff pick. And you know, go see Interstellar if you haven't. I really love that movie so much. And my boy Hans Z doing the score. What is there not to? Yeah, Hans Z.
Nerd.
Still in his firmly post, not post, like during Bois period.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's heavy bass trumpet vibes throughout it. Mountains, one of the best songs. I still regret not seeing him at Coachella, but. Now it's time for our 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on the air. This one's from ST Bean. The quarantine equivalent of coming home after a long day at work is turning on Who Shot You on Friday afternoons at the end of my work from home week. That's when my buddies Iffy, Drea, Alonzo, and thoughtfully selected guests, that's y'all, and Casey on the ones and twos welcome me with their humor, warmth, and cinema insight. I'm about to move abroad in a pandemic, and I'm already counting on this podcast to ground me and cure my homesickness. I'll be clinging to this hour once a week for dear life. For God's sake, please keep recording. If you leave the light on, I'll leave the light on. Who shot you? Shout out to my real life friend, Other Casey, who introduced me to this podcast. Who's surely listening? Hi. Love you. I love it. Yeah, snuck a shout out in there for other Casey.
Nah, that was smart. Yeah. That was real smart.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Thank you, ST Bean. And thank you, other Casey.
And thank you to our Casey for posting it on the Casey message boards to let other Casey's know about what they're doing.
They all talk.
Yeah. All right. Allison and Allie, thank you for coming on our show. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Listen to our podcast, Ruined.
Yeah, because spooky season isn't just October. It's spooky all year round.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for having us, guys.
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much. So much fun. Yeah.
That was awesome. You guys are great. Yeah, also, Hallie and I should have won. Justice for us.
You know what? Agreed.
Well, as the great Gandhi has said, it'd be like that sometimes. Drea, Alonzo, thank you for coming on the show, being here. And I'm super excited for the Christmas Men to come back. That is one of my favorite things we do. And I hope y'all, the listener, are hyped too. If you'd like to support the show, please visit us at MaximumFun.org/join. If you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message or $200 for a promotional one. Again, the number for the Who Shot Line is WSY 803-1664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an electronic mail at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.